From the KBIA newsroom in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. Today, we have a conversation with Jim Obergefell, who was the plaintiff in the landmark Supreme Court case that legalized same-sex marriage. Obergefell visited the University of Missouri earlier this month to present a lecture called Love Wins for a symposium on the science of love. Timothy Blair also joined the conversation. He's an alumnus of the Missouri School of Journalism. Obergefell and Blair were interviewed by Queer Media Association President T.J. Thompson and Vice President Samantha Kester. Here's their conversation.
So we're so lucky to have with us today Tim Blair, an alumnus of the Missouri School of Journalism, and Jim Obergefell. From D.C., who is, of course, the namesake of the landmark case which brought marriage equality to the United States. In the studio with us, we have Samantha Kester, the Vice President of the Queer Media Association, and I'm T.J. Thompson, the President of the Queer Media Association. So to kick things off, we'll start with Jim and ask him about the situation that led him to sue the state of Ohio. If you can give us some little context about that decision and kind of that process.
Absolutely. So my path to suing the state of Ohio started when my partner of 18 years was diagnosed with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And as that disease progressed, I became his full-time caregiver. And on June 26, 2013, I was standing next to his bed as we watched the news, and it was reported that the Supreme Court struck down the Defense of Marriage Act in the Windsor decision. And I spontaneously leaned over, hugged and kissed John, and said, "Let's get married." We had talked about marriage for years during our relationship, but we lived in Ohio, which was one of the states with their own Defense of Marriage Act, so it was never a possibility for us. And we wanted to get married only when it actually meant something legally. So luckily, he said yes. But then we had to figure out, well, where do we go get married? Because here's John, bedridden, unable to travel. And really, he had no physical ability due to ALS. But we ended up getting married in Maryland inside a medical jet. And we went back to Cincinnati, where we were living, and we had no plans to do anything. We simply wanted to live out John's remaining days as husband and husband. By virtue of a story about our marriage being in the newspaper, friends of ours ran into a friend of theirs who's a civil rights attorney, and our story came up in conversation. And that attorney asked our friends if they thought we might be willing to talk with him. They got in touch and we said sure. And he came to our home and pulled out a blank Ohio death certificate. And he said, "Now, do you guys understand when John dies, his last official record as a person will be wrong? Ohio will say he's unmarried, and Jim, your name won't be there as his surviving spouse." He was right. We hadn't thought about that. We knew Ohio wouldn't recognize our marriage. They wouldn't allow same-sex marriage or recognize lawful same-sex marriages from other states. But that was an abstract concept. Here was something concrete, something real, something harmful and hurtful. And when Al, the attorney, asked if we wanted to do something about it, we decided yes. So we filed suit against the state of Ohio and the city of Cincinnati to demand that when John died, his death certificate be filled out correctly. And that was the start of the case that eventually took me to the Supreme Court.
And after going to the Supreme Court, you know, you kind of became this public figure very quickly, went from someone in Ohio who was just an everyday person more of a public figure. If you can talk to us about what that transition was like, how it was being like an overnight celebrity, and any kind of repercussions, both positive or negative, from that.
You know, I never wanted to be someone that people recognized, that people would see and say, "Oh, well, I know who that is," and stop that person to talk to them. Never wanted that. John and I were very quiet, private people. We certainly weren't activists. And when this started, you know, we started it because it was about the two of us. It was very personal. It was about our relationship and wanting our relationship to matter. And after John died and as the case continued to go forward, you know, I did become the face of this effort for marriage equality. I can't say it was a difficult transition because I was doing it for all the right reasons. but it was certainly strange. I never thought I would be on television being interviewed, certainly never thought I would talk to the president or be in the White House. And all of those things really just pale in comparison to the fact that I was just fighting for John. I was fighting for the most important relationship in my life. And even though I am stopped and people come up to me and talk to me, every time it happens, I love it because they go out of their way to come over to me and thank me, give me a hug, show me photos, talk about someone they love and why this fight was important to them. And every time that happens, it really is a gift. I can never repay them for the joy that they give me in that moment.
Do you happen to have a favorite interaction with someone based on the case?
There have been so many, it's hard to say a favorite, but some of the most important to me have been ones where I've spoken at a university or at an event, and I've had young people come up to me and say, "Thank you, Jim. Being here tonight, listening to you, you gave me the courage to come out." That's something I never expected to be told. And when that happens, it just reiterates how important and how valuable this fight has been. If I can help one kid feel comfortable doing that, then everything I've gone through is certainly worth it.
This is Intersection on KBIA. I'm Sarah Shariari. Today, we're hearing from Jim Obergefell, who was the plaintiff in the Supreme Court case that legalized same-sex marriage. He was joined by Timothy Blair, a distinguished alum of the Missouri School of Journalism, who created a fund for the school to advance LGBT coverage in journalism. They're interviewed by TJ Thompson and Samantha Kester, student leaders of Mizzou's Queer Media Association.
Basically, a lot of different liberties have kind of gone up and down for different people depending on their characteristics. For example, race can really factor into someone coming out and feeling comfortable with their identity. I was just wondering if you would be willing to talk about why you think different identities in the workplace are kind of seen as more okay than others, both of you, either of you.
For me, when I think about the history of discrimination in our country, at the root of much of it is religion. I think about the civil rights movement and back when there was the fight for interracial marriage. You know, the argument used against that was, well, my religion says that isn't okay. It says that the races were created separately on different continents and they should remain so. So religion has been used in so many ways to keep people separate. And that's been a recurring theme through a lot of civil rights movements. And over time, you know, with racism, a lot of those attitudes have thankfully gone away. Not as much as we would hope, but a lot of those attitudes have gone away, and that's just become part of our everyday world. So for the LGBTQ community, you know, especially the T, our transgender community, they are part of a community that a large part of our populace still doesn't really understand. They don't necessarily have friends who are part of the LGBTQ community. They haven't had those people become part of their daily lives. And it's easy to fall back on religion as a reason to say, well, I don't know these people. My beliefs say that they are different. They don't necessarily deserve the same that everyone else receives. So I think that's the root of a lot of the discrimination we've seen is it does come down to religion. And that's something that only time can change. And it's also something that people coming out in the LGBTQ community, Harvey Milk said, come out, share your story. Stories do change hearts and minds. I know it. I've lived it. I've experienced it. So for a lot of these civil rights movements and for people who are members of a group of people who differ, it's all about being visible, becoming part of a community, and helping people understand that we're no different. So it's a matter of time. And I think that's really all we have to worry about. Well, I shouldn't say all we have to worry about, but I think that's a big part of what will move us forward in the fight for LGBTQ equality. It's a matter of time.
I would completely agree with Jim. I also think that the contradiction is that religion at the same time has played an interesting role in the advancement of LGBTQ rights. The Episcopal Church, as an example, led the forefront in marrying same-sex couples as early as in the 1980s. So today, certainly with the Metropolitan Community Church, a denomination of LGBTQ people, they served as strong spokespeople for the movement. But I think another factor is that for centuries, gay people were invisible. You know, we could go about our daily lives. We weren't like people of color, obviously. One usually couldn't look at us and identify us as being queer or being gay. So I think what happened was that when HIV became a huge factor, it required that gay people become front and center. We couldn't be quiet anymore for a variety of different reasons. First of all, we had to be honest with the people that we were with. A lot of people had to be honest with their families because they had HIV. But more importantly, I think the population in general became much more aware of gay people around them. And that enabled people to come out, if not force them to come out. So going forward, I think, certainly the battle's not over with. A lot of people still remain in the closet. Discrimination is rampant. In Missouri, you can lose your job. You can lose your housing. And that's true across the country in many states. Fortunately, I live in California, and that's not the case today. But there's a lot of work yet to be done. And I think we've got, going forward, our biggest commitment has got to be political action.
This is Intersection on KBIA. I'm Sarah Shariari. Today, we're hearing from Jim Obergefell, who was the plaintiff in the Supreme Court case that legalized same-sex marriage. He was joined by Timothy Blair, a distinguished alum of the Missouri School of Journalism, who created a fund for the school to advance LGBT coverage in journalism. They're interviewed by TJ Thompson and Samantha Kester, student leaders of Mizzou's Queer Media Association.
So here in Inclemente, Missouri, we're home to the Missouri School of Journalism, the kind of preeminent training ground for future journalists and strategic communicators of the world. What kind of role would you say that journalism has, journalism and advocacy have? How does that kind of intersect?
Journalism has played a mixed bag in the advancement of LGBTQ rights. Journalism has stereotyped us, defined us, packaged us. For decades, gay rights parades were covered by the media as sort of a freak show rather than for what it actually was supposed to be, and that was a demonstration of our pride. But at the same time, without the media and without journalism's sympathetic viewpoint, the HIV crisis would have been more horrendous than it played out to be. So I think that as journalists, the most responsible thing that we can do and that is to paint the picture correctly and to serve as a way of giving an honest portrayal of what it's like to be gay people and to live out a gay lifestyle. And that can cover things that may not be things that necessarily we would want to show, but things that are important to show. So I think, at least from my perspective, journalism plays an integral role in the advancement of LGBTQ rights.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Journalism, the media, that's how our stories do get out into the greater world. And without those stories being shared, without, a conversation with a gay man, without a conversation with a lesbian talking about their lives, their stories, without that going out for mass consumption, that won't happen. And I agree with Tim wholeheartedly that it has been a double-edged sword. Stereotypes are hard to break. And for years and years, We were portrayed as just those stereotypes. We weren't portrayed or shown as fully developed real people. We were shown as caricatures of our sexuality. And thankfully, that is changing. That's changed dramatically. And you can look at television shows, movies. The LGBTQ community has become much more fully realized in media than we were before. So it has certainly helped move us forward. I think about Will and Grace. How many gay kids who are now adults remember watching that with their parents and thinking, okay, Will, he reminds me of me in some ways, and he's not as much of a caricature. He's more of a real person. So it does have a dramatic impact on how we are perceived throughout the country.
I think one of the other things about this is that gay people in the media have come out and represent a positive presence. Anderson Cooper is a good example. Don Lemon is another example. I back to back on CNN every night are two male gay news people. So I think that a positive image and a strong voice can serve us well, certainly well into the future.
This is Intersection on KBIA. I'm Sarah Shariari. Today, we're hearing from Jim Obergefell, who was the plaintiff in the Supreme Court case that legalized same-sex marriage. He was joined by Timothy Blair, a distinguished alum of the Missouri School of Journalism, who created a fund for the school to advance LGBT coverage in journalism. They're interviewed by TJ Thompson and Samantha Kester, student leaders of Mizzou's Queer Media Association.
So kind of speaking about coverage in that way as one of the main problems that like LGBTQ people face, what do you wish that the media would cover more?
I mean, the political discussion today is so fraught with problems on all fronts for those of us who consider themselves to be progressive people. My fear is that the issues surrounding religious freedom and queer rights is going to be a huge topic that I hope the media covers. I think right now, the Trump administration is using religion as a mechanism to build support among those people who are the third of the population who tend to be their supporters. And I think we are potentially, there's a possibility that the gay community could be scapegoated in that fashion. So I think, from a media perspective, I hope that that's something that, is covered extensively. And with the upcoming Supreme Court battle, I think it probably will be on the short term.
So Jim, you kind of kickstarted off the movement for marriage equality here in the United States. And then thinking more broadly, more globally, it's still, illegal to be in same-sex relationships in more than 70 countries. So how can we help start the marriage equality process there? What kinds of strategies can we use to kind of take what we've done in the U.S. and perhaps transfer it or another solution that would work there?
I've had the ability to visit Ireland and meet with a lot of the people who are involved in the effort in Ireland for marriage equality. And I've also been to Australia, where I've been part of events and been able to speak with others about the fight for marriage equality there. And based on my experiences in those countries, it really comes down to sharing our stories. I can't underestimate the importance of that. And that was really illustrated to me when I was in Ireland and talking with people who went door to door out in the rural areas campaigning for the vote, asking people to vote yes for marriage equality. And again, I heard how surprised they were when they talked with a grandparent and they expected the grandparent to say, well, no, I'm going to vote against that. But time and time again, the older generation said, well, of course I'm voting for marriage equality because my kids have talked to me about it. And that really, to me, just illustrated how important it is to share stories, to make sure that we are heard and that we aren't invisible and we help people understand what marriage means, not from the perspective of, you know, procreation, which unfortunately is used as a reason to deny marriage equality, but from the perspective of here's we are two people forming something much bigger than they were separately, and helping people understand the importance and the value of that relationship and how that does nothing but strengthen society, not weaken it. And in Australia, the same thing. They took the what we did here in the States of sharing stories and helping people get to know us as people and understand that. They're doing the same thing in Australia. Print, video, TV campaigns showing same-sex couples in Australia with kids, without kids, helping everyone understand they're no different. So from that perspective, it's I think what we've learned here in the States is it's all about that one-on-one conversation with your family, with your friends, with your neighbors, within your community. That's how you make change happen, and that's how you make lasting change happen. And that's what Ireland did, and that's what they're doing in Australia as well. So that's a huge part of it. And then it comes down to, you know, having people who are willing to stand up and say, this is what our laws say. Our laws say this applies to everyone. We're losing sight of that. We have to go back to what our laws say, what our Constitution says, equal justice under law. And it's reinforcing that concept that when these laws are written, it's for every person. It's not just some people. So that's the other effort we have to do is just break through that idea that laws, rights only apply to certain people. And we do that by telling stories.
And a follow-up question, is there anything that we can do here in the U.S. to have a kind of a role in that conversation globally about marriage equality?
Well, in the previous administration, we certainly did. You know, our efforts in the U.N. with, you know, when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, human rights are gay rights are human rights. That was our administration's perspective. That was their belief. That was their value. And that has an impact around the globe. You know, the United States is seen as a leader in many things around the world. And to have President Obama say, I support marriage equality and I support equality for our LGBTQ community, that carries significant weight. Unfortunately, now we've lost that. We have an administration now that is clearly doing everything they can to take back every bit of progress we've seen under President Obama. I'm worried about marriage equality. You know, with judicial appointments and the Supreme Court, who knows when we'll have additional justices appointed to that Supreme Court. So it is very concerning. So at this point, unfortunately, I don't believe the United States is a leader when it comes to LGBTQ rights globally. We've taken a step back. We've taken several steps back. And right now, we are definitely not a leader. We are actually one of the worst, but we're definitely not a shining light when it comes to that like we had been. And unfortunately, I'm afraid it's going to get worse.
And from you, Tim, do you have any thoughts?
I would absolutely agree with all of that. I think that the Trump administration is more than willing to throw the LGBTQ community right under the bus. I think that the best thing that we can do in this country is to serve by example. We were late coming to the table. The EU was instrumental in moving the issues of marriage equality front and foremost well before the United States took it on. But when the United States, much to Jim's bravery, once we had marriage equality in this country, once we had the concept of marriage equality embedded in this country, I think a lot of people sat back and figured that we had achieved what we wanted and we could rest on our laurels. But to Jim's point, I think that those people are very short-sighted, that we have to continue to fight for our cause. and that is for equality across the board, and marriage is absolutely a key linchpin to all of that. I think that if, you know, my biggest concern is that the gay community continue to be politically active and to speak out when faced with discrimination, and being willing to fight. Voting is absolutely the strongest thing that anybody can do. We have, you know, a lot of people, I think, stay at home because they feel like their vote doesn't really count. But if you're gay and if you're queer, transgender or lesbian, this is the time. Get out and vote. Fight for the candidates to stand for the cause.
So you kind of talked a little bit about passing the baton on to younger generations, to use your words. TJ and I are both college students, so what advice do the two of you have for us to remember that history and continue to promote a culture of respect kind of in regard to the LGBTQ community and across, like, racial lines and class lines and things like that?
I think the most effective thing anyone can do is to go outside of their comfort zone, to purposefully seek out people who are different, whether that's the color of their skin, their religion, their gender, their sexual orientation or gender identity. Seek those people out. Surround yourself with them, because that's, number one, how you start to break down walls. That's how you break stereotypes. But it also makes your world a whole lot more enjoyable. And I think part of that is, you know, I know in the gay male community, the whole age thing is an issue. And it's so easy to think, well, I'm only going to hang out with people my age. I don't want to talk to those old guys over there. Or, you know, that's an issue. And until we understand that those old guys over there really have something valuable to tell us, to teach us, we can learn from them, and we also need to understand what it was like for them, we're missing out on something incredibly important. So I think it's that whole, don't just surround yourself and don't be comfortable surrounding yourself only with people who are like you. Break out of your mold. Break out of that comfort zone and make sure you meet someone who's different.
Thank you for joining us here on Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. And of course, thank you to our guests, Jim Obergefell, Tim Blair, and TJ Thompson and Samantha Kester, who interviewed them. If you'd like to listen to this show again, you can visit us online at kbia.org. You can also like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, where we are at IntersectKBIA. Our producers are Abby Ivory Gagna, Beatrice Costa-Lima, and Drew Matthew. Our music is Montana Skies. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection here on KBIA 91.3 FM.